Philippe Spillard. Philippe did his undergraduate degree and Master of Science degree at Ecole Polytechnique, and his PhD in Stanford at Aeronautical Engineering. As it seems all PhD students in aero at Stanford do, he spent time at NASA Ames as a postdoc and as a permanent employee after that. He was at Ames for 8 years, and for the past 11 years he's been at Boeing looking at, among other things, turbulence modeling issues for computational aerodynamics. Philippe's going to talk to us today about detached eddy simulation. Philippe?
Thank you. So, yeah, very simple title for my talk. It's fine if you walked in thinking, what is detached eddy simulation? I hope you'll go home thinking it's new and exciting. I want to say that very, very much of this work was done as a team with Strelitz, Schur, and Traven people in St. Petersburg. They've been under contract with us. And for a lot of the turbulence work, I define tests and they do the hard work. So DES is a new technique that we first published in 1997. So that was a concept and the first real results in 1999. So it's quite new. I believe it's different from LES or from anything else, you know, strictly speaking, that's been done for turbulence prediction. So my goal is to treat separated flows at high Reynolds numbers. And that's of value to Boeing, but I'm also hoping to help the car industry, truck, boats, anybody. So the outline of my talk is I want to describe the logic behind it, which is really the cost of LES in boundary layers being excessive, and the fact that the Reynolds average Navier-Stokes, the RANS methods, we don't see them as becoming accurate enough for separated flows. So the proposal I'll go into, we use the SA Spot-Elmras one equation model with a modified length scale. There is a whole soup of acronyms of different proposals that are also a hybrid in the sense of using LES and RANS in different regions of the flow. Then show a bunch of examples, aerofoil, cylinder, tilt rotor, undercarriage, running gear. I had translated this into British English because I gave the talk in Southampton. Made them happy. In terms of conclusions, I'll have two slides, one with good news and another with bad news. So in conferences and a review paper, I published some estimates. I sat down and I redid a little bit what Chapman had done in 1979, which is to say, well, when is LES going to take over the aerospace CFD business for turbulence, take it from RANS? And I came up with a pretty different date because his date was mid-90s, so we already know that something was off. And my date is about 245, assuming, you know, the usual laws for the speed up of computers. And these were pretty optimistic assumptions, including the idea of wall modeling inside LES. And I believe doing an LES of a complete wing would take about 10 to the 11th power grid points. So in my paper, I have a table of different strategies starting from DNS. And there, I think the whole wing would be possible around the year 2080. I know I'll be done. LES, including wall modeling, so about 2045. I claim that DES is possible today for these flows. Obviously, I'm not claiming perfection, but I'm claiming that we can do an honest DES today of a whole airplane, and I'll show some examples. Before that, I had different, older methods with RANS, steady and unsteady 2D. And I also gave my opinion about whether each approach to turbulence had a strong or weak empirical content, and so on. So now, why is LES so expensive? It's because there are very large areas of thin attached boundary layers, especially around the leading edge of the wing, which is where Chapman, I think, got his estimate wrong. Today, there are a bunch of people that are trying to do LES of a thin slice of airfoil with shallow separation, and there's a big European LES foil project. And I think this is still out of reach to do a, what I call a converged LES, something nice and accurate. You need at least 100 million points. The other thing is, you know, some people say the RANS modeling is just hopeless, but I don't think anybody has shown exactly how many grid points LES would need to predict separation from a smooth surface, say predict the maximum lift of an airfoil. And so someday LES will outperform the RANS, but we don't know when. Now, on the other hand, RANS modeling of separated flows, say, flow past a circular cylinder, flow past a building, flow past a car, nobody's happy with it at all, and nobody is seeing a good idea around the corner that should make enough difference that this would work. So I feel like I can say that high accuracy has not been demonstrated for the RANS, even if it's unsteady. And when will the breakthrough occur? Nobody knows. Now, if we look at, if we back off in Reynolds number back to a few thousand where the DNS is possible, then people have had pretty good success doing this is, even down from 1,000 to a couple hundred. This is a direct simulation by Nachar and Balachander on a flat plate. You don't see it because it's edge-on, but this is a kind of simulation where people have been quite successful. So even though the geometry is two-dimensional, the simulation is 3D using periodic conditions from here to there. This is what it looks like from the side. And these people have been gotten good results on their pressure. This is another study. This one is probably in a few thousand work of Jordan on the cylinder, in which the there are the experimental data and the 3D LES results, so a simulation that looks like the other one, you know, periodic span-wise with a lot of three-dimensional eddies, gives very good results and much, much better than any of the 2D simulations. And so if we're looking at separated flows, it looks like we need to go and resolve the turbulence, three-dimensional turbulence. It needs to be in the solution. We cannot let the model take care of it. So the proposal of DES is to start from a RANS model so that it's capable of doing the boundary layers by itself, and then sensitize it to the grid spacing that I call delta. And in the regions where the grid is fine enough for an LES, then those Reynolds stresses produced by the model will scale down and then allow the flow to have its instabilities, energy cascade, and then we're going to get these 3D eddies. If you have a RANS model and you don't sensitize it to delta, then you're going to get only some pretty large. At the most, you'll get just vortex jetting, but you will not get fine turbulence. Now, in the regions where the grid is too coarse, then the model will function back as a RANS. And so if you have large boundary layers that are attached and really don't need much intelligence, then the model, the RANS model would do fine. Now, with a SA model, it's quite simple to do that sensitization. It has a destruction term that depends on the length scale. And usually the length scale is just distance to the wall, and it reflects how eddies are confined when they're close to a wall and they cannot grow in length scale very much. So in DES, we'll take the minimum of that wall distance and a constant times the grid spacing. So now we have turned the one equation RANS model into a RANS model if you're on this branch, and then subgrid scale model, just like any other LES model if we're on that branch of this minimum. Then we get the classical scaling for subgrid scale modeling, where the eddy viscosity is proportional to strain rate or deformation rate of the resolved solution times the grid spacing squared. It's very similar to any other transport model for subgrid scale eddy viscosity. Now, traditionally in LES, people, when they have a three-dimensional grid, they would take the cube root of the volume. So it would be for delta. They would take the cube root of delta x times delta y times delta z. In DES, it's different. We take the maximum. And I argue that if your grid is too coarse in any direction to resolve an eddy, then you should use your eddy viscosity to smooth it out so we don't get wiggles in the solution. And so DES has only one new constant called CDES, and we set it in homogeneous turbulence. So this was the, this is the original sketch of what a DES should look like. And in this region, you have very thin boundary layer and it will work in RANS. And then naturally, the model will turn into a subgrid scale model in this region, say behind a spoiler, would be done with LES. Now, it's going to be up to you to decide whether you want this region to be a RANS or an LES region. And you're going to control that with your grid spacing, because the grid spacing enters the turbulence model. And if you have a very fine grid here, then this small separated region can turn into an LES. If not, it will remain RANS. So my favorite slide, I call the four-cylinder slide, is, again, all work by my friends in Russia. If you take a circular cylinder and it's with laminar separation, say 10,000 Reynolds number, this is what the solutions look like depending on what your approach to turbulence is. This is a steady RANS, and the flow is symmetric and very smooth. These are vorticity contours. And sometimes, actually, it's fairly difficult to get a steady solution, but with long time steps and symmetry. So this is what the cheapest approach to this flow would be, and it's really not very accurate. Now, there's a group of people that believe that unsteady RANS is enough of an answer. So you take the same turbulence model, but you just tell it, okay, give me an unsteady solution. And on a circular cylinder, then it's happy to give you a solution with vortex shedding. And so you get your shedding. But if you refine the grid, say, on this solution, it will look just the same, just a little bit more accurate, but it's not going to change visibly. If you do an LES or a DES, then depending on going from a coarse to a fine grid, and here we have a factor of 2 in spacing, then both solutions will have some turbulent looking eddies. They're both three-dimensional. This is just a slice out of a three-dimensional simulation. And the one with a fine grid is going to have smaller eddies. The energy cascade was allowed to go farther to smaller scale because the eddy viscosity is smaller. And so you have visibly more physical content in this solution than that one, and then you can keep going. And that gives you a way to improve your solution, and just as important, a way to test it. You can go, you change your grid, you know you're changing your physics significantly, whereas here, you're still limited by how good the turbulence model is. And if a turbulence model is not very competent for that flow, no matter how much grid you use, you're out of luck. So, similar proposals. The group of people, notable people, are Orszag and Durbin, and they have tended to call their methods VLES, and that's what I've called unsteady RANS. You just take a standard turbulence model designed for RANS and let it go unsteady and do its vortex shedding. So it's very easy to define, but it's really not easy to interpret because you have to distinguish between what you call the coherent solution with this big vortices shedding and then the incoherent or random turbulence. And I think that distinction is really suspect because nobody has seen a spectral gap between the large eddies and the small random eddies. The spectrum of turbulence is very continuous in most cases, almost all cases. Also, the fine grid limit of this method is not LES or DNS. It's still RANS. So it still depends on your model more than I want. There was some work in France in which they did U-RANS with a K-epsilon model, but they turned down the constants so there would be more instabilities. I don't think they finished that. Fairly similar work by Bat and Goldberg and Chakravarthy. They called it limited numerical scales. I think it's quite close. And you notice that they, just like I took a minimum of 2 length scale, they took the minimum of a K-epsilon model and a Smigorinsky, which is the kind of standard subgrid scale model. So in both cases, we try and get the eddy viscosity to be either limited by its mixing length or limited by the grid spacing. Similar work by this team, some work in Sweden. I'm hoping we can get Volvo on board because they make buses and cars and all that. Now, many people go back to an article by Speziale in which he said he was going to blend RANS and SGS models. And I disagree with what he did. He was he was looking at the grid spacing and comparing with the Kolmogorov scale and that only. And I think that will get you from directly from DNS to RANS without having LES in between. Obviously, Fazel disagreed with me because he's still pushing that and is now calling it FSM. So the DES method has been applied by a whole bunch of groups, and usually the results agree. And so I consider it as fairly stable already. And now I want to discuss a series of examples to get an idea of what it could do and what it can't. So a paper with my Russian team, 99, in a meeting in Corsica, in which we studied the 0012. Therefore, this is not from their paper, but this we can start maybe with the unsteady RANS. So this is a thin airfoil at 60 degrees angle of attack, and this is the unsteady RANS. And these are two planes in a spanwise direction from the same solution. And this solution looks much like the one on the circular cylinder. You have these large vortices being shed, very smooth contours of vorticity, and exactly the same thing in two different planes. So this solution won two-dimensional, even though the grid was 3D. And these are now four planes at the same time from a DES solution. And now you see pretty strong differences between the four planes. So it's a 2D way to show that the solution is three-dimensional and sustains. It remains three-dimensional. You don't need to stimulate it at all, except in the initial condition, of course, to make it three-dimensional. So almost all the work we did has been on PCs, so with fairly modest grids. Now at 100,000, we had a grid of 140, 60 by 25, and the spanwise period of the simulation, just one chord. So I'll show some results at low and high angles of attack, which are summarized in words here, but prefer show the picture. Okay, in all four frames, this is the angle of attack in this direction, but on the right it goes from 0 to 90 degrees, and on the left just from 0 to 16 to show the part where the airfoil is still working and has attached flow. And we have up here is the lift coefficient and down here the drag coefficient. So if we start where the airfoil is working normally, then, solid line is the experiments. And in the region where the experiments tend to have hysteresis or difference between different tonal, this is how I represented the scatter. You know, there's an area where there's scatter between experiments. And let's see. So in this region, this attached flow and the DES is working as a RANS. Everything is simple, steady flow. The DES maximum lift is a bit lower than the experiment, mostly because of lower Reynolds number. This was done at 100,000. The experiments were around several million. Similarly, we have a drag in the DES at 100,000 that's consistent with experiments in that range. When we ran again at 5 million, then we got the same drag pretty much that they got. So in this region, it's RANS again. Everything is working fine. Now, when we go beyond maximum lift, then the circles here are the DES, and it follows the lift of the experiment too well. This is drag. That's right. The lift, of course, is easy to come back down to zero. But the drag is really excellent from DES, and these were really not monster simulations. In contrast, the unsteady RANS, which is two-dimensional, just like it did on cylinder, goes too much, way too high in drag. So this was the first true three-dimensional DES we did, and the results came out looking quite good. So we had a start, it seemed like this effect that we got from really resolving the large 3D eddies, it was coming in. So now one thing with a thin airfoil is that the separation point was just about fixed. Of course, separation at the sharp trailing edge, but the separation at the leading edge was fairly easy since it was fairly thin. And the work on the circular cylinder is more complex because you have a smooth surface, and so the separation point has much more, can move much more, and in particular depends on whether your boundary layers are laminar or turbulent. There's this drag crisis around a Reynolds number of 200,000 in which separation happens later if transition has occurred before that. And so with a turbulence model, you can tell it. You can make it turn on and become turbulent before separation or not. So if you don't, then you have this, what I call the LS series, laminar separation, and then a TS series with turbulent separation. It's not really transition prediction. We just made a transition. So it would be like tripping it or not tripping it. And then we use Reynolds numbers that were consistent with the type of separation, starting around 100,000 and going to several million. That's the first study in which we were able to do some great refinement, had enough time. We're able to do a factor of two in each direction. The laminar separation cases are still sensitive to grid. Turbulent separations were fine. Fixed spanwise, two diameters, which is not huge, but it's not too bad. This is what the flow looks like. So here are our two diameters of spanwise period. Looks larger than that. Anyhow, this is our simulation again. The simulation spontaneously wants to be three-dimensional, and if your initial condition has any three-dimensionality in it, then it will sustain it. And forever, you will have vortex shedding, you know, so if you filtered this field, you would see large vortices, spanwise vortices, but you also have a whole jungle of three-dimensional eddies in between, and the flow wants to be 3D. Well, this study cost us a lot of time and discussions. And one thing that we did not really expect is that the cases, the flow past circular cylinder, had a lot of modulations. So many people expect the vortex shedding from a circular cylinder to be just periodic. But this is what came out. The solid lines and the dashed lines are two cases, are the same Reynolds number, but with different grids or different initial conditions. Now, this is a lift signal down here and the drag up there. And what you see is that the amplitude of the lift fluctuations have pretty strong variations. Now, this is 200 time units, so it's, 0.2, that's 40 shedding periods. Now, in the literature, you find people that say, I'm going to do the circular cylinder, and then they do about this much, and they say, oh, it's shedding, I'm ready to go, this is my drag, this is my lift. But actually, all the three-dimensional simulations produce a form of chaos in which the shedding never becomes truly periodic, and you keep having this change in amplitude. And it's correlated. When the amplitude of the lift is larger, the flow is more coherent spanwise, and the drag is higher, and vice versa. Now, is this numerical garbage? Could be. I don't think it is. These are experimental measurements by Cantwell and Coles on the circular cylinder. they're measurements of pressure near the front of the cylinder. So they're really a measure of how the flow is shedding, and which you would strongly be correlated with the lift on it. And this is exactly what they saw, strong modulations in amplitude. I don't see we get a bit of a frequency drift in our results. Now this probe was in the region where the turbulence was starting to impinge on it, but all these three were basically reflecting the shedding back and forth. So I think this kind of physics is correct and means that you need extremely long samples before you can go and say what really is your mean drag and pressure and all that on these bluff bodies. Now, unfortunately, what this meant for us is that we were, okay, not only did we have differences along one case between times when the shedding was strong and weak, we also had differences between cases. And in the end, we got pretty much non-unique results. That is, we expected, let's see, what would be a, okay, there's a correlation I was telling you about between the amplitude of the lift fluctuation, the CL prime, and the mean lift coefficient. We expected that we would get a single result for drag and for CL prime, but actually we have almost a continuum. These are the turbulent cases, these are the laminar cases. But similarly, the let's see, this is the length of the recirculation region. And we have a trend, okay, the laminar cases are up here, the turbulents are down here. But we found that flow much harder to pin down in terms of getting a good statistical sample than we expected. The good news is that, for instance, the pressure results were extremely encouraging. This is a pressure on the cylinder starting in the front, going to the back, CP. And the two experiments are that Reynolds number, about the same Reynolds number that agree extremely well, these two symbols. And the unsteady rants gives way too much drag, and the CP is not flat in the back. And that's been very consistent. The three DESs here have a square root of two refinement from each case to the next. And first of all, they got very close to the experiment. Second of all, there's real appearance of great convergence, which is something that is very elusive with LES. All these three curves are fairly smooth, indicating a pretty good statistical sample. And the distance between the first and second is larger than second and third. So I know as we refine again, we're going to go a little bit beyond the experiment. But getting something that's very suggestive of great convergence on a messy, separated, turbulent flow is pretty good. So now for something more applied. We have been working on the tilt rotor airplane that we make with a bell. And this is the animal. What's interesting, well, okay, the reason for the work is that while the tilt rotor is hovering, the rotors are blowing down on the wing, and that's pushing down on the wing. And the amount of downforce you get from this is actually quite significant compared with the payload. So if we could take out, say, 10 or 20% of that downforce, we could put more soldiers in it and make the airplane a lot more attractive. So we have a DARPA contract to do simulations of this. Well, okay. This is an image of what the flow looks like. The rotor downwash is going down. And there's this wing with its flap. And, of course, massive separation under it. And what Wignansky, who is at University of Arizona, has proposed is to go and manipulate the boundary layer around here where it's separating and help the flow turn and stay not exactly attached, but closer to attached to the flap instead of falling off this way and making a wide wake. And also, the way we're treating the boundary layer here prevents the large vortex shedding and also would probably reduce the buffeting on the airplane. Now, the way we do this, or they do it in the lab, and we're modeling, is there is a slot here, and there's a zero mass flow jet, which is that it's not blowing continuously. It's blowing and aspirating back and forth. So it's, some people call it a synthetic jet. And it is creating coherent vortices in the separated layer there and helping it increase the mixing and turn the corner more. And this is work done by Linda Hedges at Boeing. Initially, Kusunose started the work, again using the Russian code, with NTS is the name of their company. It's DARPA funding. And so we want to reduce drag reduction, where now drag means downforce. And Wignansky designed the thing, did the wind tunnel test, got some excellent drag reduction. So it seemed great. Now, two things happened in the CFD is, first of all, okay, some of the effects of flow control were reproduced. But again, we had these drag excursions back to high levels. So the drag went low, and then now and then there would be a surge. And we think it, you know, it looks correct, again, compared with the experiment on the cylinder. We think it's a feature of bluff body flows. But if you're an engineer and you have to tell your boss, well, the drag went low for a long time, and then, whoops, back up. And then it takes you 6 months instead of the week you were hoping to get your statistical sample. It makes life difficult. The other thing is the dependence on the blowing rate is still in fairly poor agreement. This is the typical case, the one that should have worked really well. I've 85 degrees of flap, the angle of attack is minus 85. This is preliminary, but I don't expect huge changes. This is the experiment. So the drag coefficient starts around 1.5. And this is the blowing coefficient here. And as you increase the blowing coefficient, they say the drag comes down progressively. What is coming out of our simulations, and I have here two runs with two series with different frequencies. We're a little bit low on the drag initially, you know, 1.3 instead of 1.5. Okay, so it gives you an idea of the kind of error bars that we still have on this kind of separated flow. But what's more strange is that we get a really good effect of the flow control for low blowing coefficients. And then either it saturates or it even goes bad for higher blowing coefficients. So, you know, we're not completely totally disappointed. At least we're getting some effect. I'm not sure many other groups have been able to get the effect of flow control. And it's a pretty subtle thing you're doing to the flow. But it still gives you an idea of how difficult this kind of situation is, in which you're compounding the difficulties of separated flow, fairly high Reynolds numbers, and flow control with a pretty small slot on the airfoil. Now we're looking at a NASA contract. Again, work of Hedges. Again, the Russian code. This was funded by NASA, and it was an experiment done by Lassos at NASA Langley on a simplified landing gear truck, which is shaped after the one of the 757, but only has the wheels, the post, the beam, and the axles. No disc brakes, no. And eventually, this is work for noise. We want to reduce the noise of landing gears in approach, because now the engines have become really quiet, and in approach, the noise of the landing gear is starting to be significant. I'm talking about community noise, that is, the noise people hear on the ground. And so Linda did some steady RAND solutions which did not completely converge. This flow does not want to go steady, so we still had some meandering there. So this is really not a solution, but it gives you an idea of what the steady RANDs equations were trying to do. This one is an unsteady RANDs, and the shedding from the, you know, you have a vertical cylinder, and there's some shedding from it, but it's really sluggish. And you get some turbulence in here, but again, much weaker than what is coming out of the DES. These were all done on the same grid, and these two on the same time step. So no numerical differences. It's a difference in how the turbulence is modeled. And we will calculate noise from this. We don't have the code quite ready for that. But we're getting turbulence here. We're getting vortex shedding from the vertical post, just like you would expect. So visually, the DES solution is quite a bit better. Unfortunately, the experiment didn't have lots and lots of, well, had nothing unsteady. And mostly what Lazos had was mean pressure distributions. And we're looking at the front and aft wheel here. In all of these, we took 1 minus Cp, the pressure coefficient, and we drew it on the normal. So the distance between the surface and that is a measure of the pressure. And when a CP is 1 on the front, you have stagnation. So when it touches the wheel, you know you have a stagnation point. And this flow is disappointing in the sense that the unsteady rants and the DES give almost the same answers. In the region where they differ, the DES is better, but it's not perfect. Still, you know, there are many features around this flow that were not trivial. This is a separated flow with strong interference between the two wheels. And we get the stagnation point just in the right place. We're not quite as good on the lower one. And then around here, there's more differences. Well, we're waiting for the reviews on that paper. What's puzzling us the most is that the drag on the on this wheel came out really different from the simulation and from the experiment. And what's really strange in the experiment, his drag on the aft wheel is larger than on the front wheel, even though the aft wheel is drafting behind the front one. So, you know, it's fairly complex geometry, and many things went right, but not all of them. If you're a turbulence person, you always want to know about Reynolds stresses. And these are contours taken in a plane that is behind the truck, the landing gear truck. And they come from the DES. And this is the mean velocity. And so you see a kind of pattern, a little bit like a clover, four-leaf clover, which shows that there are some vortices trailing from the corners. The degree of symmetry between the two sides gives you an idea of how good our statistical sample is. It's not bad, but it's obviously not perfect from here to there, say. This is a turbulent kinetic energy that was resolved by the simulation. So just from averaging, it has some hot spots, pretty wide distribution behind the vertical post. Now, something that's really about DES and gives us an idea of what's going on is we look at the U prime W prime Reynolds stress. So it's a Reynolds stress, it's a shear stress in the plane that we're looking at. And this is a resolved stress. So we took our unsteady solutions and did the standard Reynolds averaging. Now the nonlinearity gives you a residual. Now this is the model stress. This is the one that the turbulence model itself was generating. And I like that plot a lot because it shows that the model stress, which is the one that comes from an empirical turbulence model with all its flaws, is much, much smaller than the resolved stress. So this is one way to say that the solution resolved almost all the turbulence. The grid was fine enough for it to, that all, almost all the turbulence was done by the unsteady solution and not taken care of by the turbulence model. Okay, now the next few examples will be more sketchy and they're not ours. This is a small company in Stanford called AccuSim where they sell a CFD code just like many people. And they started getting into DES. Here's an example of a steady pressure on a car, a simplified car body that is one of the standard test cases. And so there's a smooth solution from a steady code. This is the same geometry, but with a hybrid method, the DES, at different time steps. So we're starting to see vortex shedding from the cab and much more unsteadiness. And this is very preliminary, but if you look at the pressure coefficient, I think if you talk to anybody in the car industry, they're going to say, CFD, yeah, nice, but the back of the car is always wrong. We just never get the pressure correctly, no matter how good a turbulence model we're using. And here what AccuSim found, that's Shakib, is that the going from the rants, which is the chain dash, to the DES solid line, moved the results about two-thirds of the way, or even better, towards the experiment. Now this is the first grid they tried, which was not very fine and all that. So that's why I'm hoping that DES will really help the car industry, trucks and all that. And the same thing for the pressure over the trunk of the car. It helped quite a bit. Now some work. The next two slides are work done by Wurzler and Forsyth. He's at the U.S. Air Force Academy and has lots of CPU time. It's using a COBOL, a code called COBOL, which was written again by the Air Force, but now there's a company, a spin-off, and so it's a structure that can grid anything, just about. And this is a generic truck that the U.S. DOE is working on, has a contract. Here he has an unsteady RAND solution that is almost steady. You know, there's separation here, but for instance here, the separation off the back of the truck looks quite steady. If you switch to DES, you get much more unsteadiness in all regions. He has not shown me drag results or CPs for this yet, but it's going to work. Same team exactly as I told you, they could grid anything. They do an F-15 1 week, and 2 weeks later, the F-16. And their grids, I didn't bring a picture of the grid, but their grids are really not that coarse. They grow hexahedra from the surface, and after that, it goes into tetrahedra, but they have a pretty good boundary layer grid and all that. And this is a result, I think, at 65 degrees angle of attack. Now, I'm showing you only color fluid dynamics here, but this is to show that it's 2001, and we can take a whole airplane and do a simulation that has all the LES, you know, all the look of LES in the back. And Jim is telling me the lift and drag are within about 5% of the database for this condition. What we want to do is we want to spin this airplane. They're starting to put the terms in the code to go and really put the airplane in a spin and then go ask the question, what steady state does it want for the spin? And is the spin rate fairly close to what we found in flight test? And I think CFD is ready for that. We're ready to try things that are this hard. Now, my own interest is we're more and more interested in noise, landing gear noise, jet noise, noise from flap edges on our airplanes. Noise is the only thing that will really force Boeing to make new airplanes, I mean new models, because airports like London and Brussels are just tightening their rules all the time. And so this is a piece of work we're doing, which is, I call it towards LES, because the LES is really not converged yet in terms of gridding. But this is a simple jet that is coming out of a nozzle here of diameter 1 in those units. And these are pressure contours, and you see here it went off the scale in the turbulent region, but you have vortex rings pairing and then a breakdown into 3D turbulence. And then these pressure contours are showing you the sound waves that are leaving. And within a matter of a year or two, I want to be able to do simulations in which the noise will be accurate, and we can go help Boeing and the engine companies make better nozzles. And certainly, it's known that the strongest noise from a jet is propagating at about 40 degrees from the direction where it's blowing. So a lot of things are right, but it's not fine enough grid, and acoustics is turning out more difficult than I thought. So this is not a DES yet. We don't have the nozzle, but again, sooner or later, I want to have the engine here, the boundary layers on the side of the nozzle, inside the fan stream, and all these things. So I promise reasons from optimism and pessimism. The other slide is a little bit longer. Still, I'm optimistic for DES because it's a system that, okay, I think it's a new idea. I think it's quite simple, and implementations by different groups have agreed. So the method is putting down some roots. My wife thought I was crazy for claiming, you know, being happy that it never gave absurd results. But I think, especially in turbulence, if you try something very new, well, sometimes it's going to go really crazy on you. Now, you can make it give absurd results if your grid is really very inadequate, if it's much too coarse, or if your, say, your spanwise period is much too short, things like that. But a careful user will go and change his grid or her grid and period and all that. Some results, I think, have been excellent, like the circular cylinder pressure was really very good, I think. the computing cost is moderate. All these things were done on, I mean, the biggest thing we used was a cluster of like eight PCs or something like that. Most of it single head PCs. Now the geometry, if we went to geometry with a huge range of scales, then we would start getting more expensive. That is, if you do a 747 and you want to know the noise created by the windshield wiper, well, that's a valid problem. So someday we'll go and we'll refine the grid like crazy around the windshield wiper to get an idea of how much noise it's making for the pilot. Or I think one of the windows on the 747 has a bit of separation on it, and we'd like to reduce that. So you might go and do some microscopic refinement in some regions. Or, I mean, the windshield wiper is almost funny, but we had problems on the 777 with noise from the landing gear cavity for the noise gear. And we went and we put a baffle in there to break up some resonance. And again, so we could simulate, say, most of the body and then go strongly refine the grid right around the landing gear well in front and try and get that on steady flow and predict it and then find fixes without having to go to flight test. I was happy to identify, as I showed behind the landing gear, the result and the model rental stresses. We started seeing some inertial ranges, the -5/3 spectrum behind the circular cylinder. And I believe DES responds quite well to grid refinement in the correct range. That is, if you stay out of the very inadequate grid mode. So I think DES can open some doors, you know, for practical work. Now, why is it not going to solve turbulence? Well, first of all, we still rely on the Rantz model to predict separation. So the old problem that goes back to the 60s of how to do turbulence model predict boundary layers responding to adverse gradients and separating is still there. And so we still need to work on turbulence models for their boundary, how they work in boundary layers. We still need to expect that, you know, separation is very sensitive. And just like experiments done on the East Coast and the West Coast don't give exactly the same separation point, similarly, the CFD will still remain challenging. You know, separation is the big challenge. Transition is also very difficult both to predict and even to dictate to the turbulence model. You know, I said, oh, we just tell the turbulence model be turbulent or be laminar. Well, numerically, there are some difficulties associated with that. One thing I forgot to say is on the circular cylinder, when we went to say around some of 5 million, I thought we would have laminar boundary layer and then transition and then turbulent boundary layer and then it separates. And we found that that's not true at all. What you have is that separation and transition happen at the same time for many, many millions of Reynolds number. I think LES does not always give great results on bluff body flows. Even DNS has had some problems. There was a workshop on the square cylinder, which usually is considered easy because the separation points are right at the corners. But even then, we'll still need to basically always have a lot of grid, be ready to change your grid, and ask a lot of questions. Grid design is already very challenging with RANTs, but with DES and LES, it's even more challenging. So it's going to be hard to make a push-button system where the user could just say, grid this for me and go. Eventually, things will be done with automatic grid adaptation. But grid adaptation and LES are things that people have not mixed so far. So there's a whole new challenge of, if you have an LES, so the flow is unsteady and has a lot of small scales, how are you going to drive your grid adaptation? One thing that's a little bit wasteful is when you have geometries with a large range of scales, say the windshield wiper and the 4.7. So far, we've always done the ES with a single time step, so the time step that is needed for the windshield wiper is much too short for the rest of the airplane. Another thing is, so that's an industry thing. If I come up with a perfect code that overnight gives us a great solution on the airplane, Boeing is going to say, yeah, what if we need 3,000 runs to design the next airplane? So we need something that actually is smaller than a grand challenge. You know, it shouldn't be a supercomputer, big adventure kind of run. I mentioned these chaotic results that we get for these 2D bluff body flows, and some 3D flows seem to be a little bit less pathological, but still, even though I think they're physical, so I like them, I think they're correct result, interpreting the results really takes forever. And so, as I observed my colleagues at Boeing doing CFD, you know, people with all different ages and all different levels of training and motivation, I find that many of them don't look at their turbulence enough. Many of them don't even want to look at the eddy viscosity. Some of them don't know if their turbulence model came on or not. And except for the simplest flows, the CFD users are going to have to be to look into their solutions, understand enough about turbulence before they do a good enough job. Thank you.
Cylinder results against measurements of sort of global quantities on the cylinder, lift, mm-hmm. and also local quantities on the surface of the cylinder, things like mean pressure coefficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you looked at quantities interior to the flow as opposed to on boundaries? And
yes.
So, do you think your models will be as effective?
Oh, yes and no. Yes, we have looked, and I have a paper I can give you where we compared with Reynolds stresses, say. From the experiment, the agreement, say, on the reattachment length was caused us much more trouble, but the experiments have much more scatter there. So it gets fairly easy on Reynolds stresses or reattachment to find enough experiments at CFD somewhere in between. One day I emailed my friend in Russia and I said, I have a great breakthrough. I found another experiment at high Reynolds number, and we're in between the two, so we're okay. So, yes, we have done some Reynolds stress and reattachment length comparisons. And yeah, I think we can claim that we're within the experimental scatter, but definitely it's much wider. And I should also show the turbulence separation pressure coefficient, and it's similar. With the two experiments, get really far apart. Even though you'd think that in the several million Reynolds number, things would become more less sensitive than with laminar separation. But it turned out actually the Roshko and the Van Noonen results were pretty far apart. I have a paper on that. I'd love to give you a reprint, and it's pretty obscure European journal, so it's likely you haven't seen it.
Anyone else?
So in the same experiment, can you measure the modulations, the high frequency modulations in drag and lift on the cylinder? Directly, or was that through the pressure,
surface
pressure fluctuation?
You mean in the lab? I think they measure them directly with the balance, which in fact means that what they had in the lab was averaged over maybe five diameters. A big issue in the paper is should you have a period long enough that the flow becomes uncorrelated? Or should you agree that your shedding is almost in phase across the spin? And we had to give up on getting long enough to be decorrelated the way we do in, say, in a channel DNS, because it's just huge. But we did a test where we compared the lift and drag, and it's in the paper too, on the whole cylinder, the two diameters that we had, and then on just one section. And they were pretty close to each other. So. Yeah, I'm sure the experiment did it with the drag balance, so it was averaged over a whole their whole model, and it was still pretty coherent.
And that drag balance can respond fast enough to those modulations?
Well, you have to trust them about that. Well, the frequency is not huge. What was the mass of the cylinder? Did you have to take it out? I would think so. Well, no, actually. It had to be rigid enough that you didn't care what the mass was. By the way, everybody gets the shedding frequency just right. Even the vortex method gets it right. So shedding frequency is easy. The amplitude becomes much more dependent on experiment and who's running it. The drag is more stable, at least for laminar separation. For the cases in the million, Reynolds number, several million, then there are not enough experiments, and some of them I wasn't born. So, you know, it's still easier to hide at the high Reynolds numbers. The best code we have is structured as high order upwind, like fifth order upwind over the Rance region, and fourth order centered in the LES region.
Spatial discretization actually switches.
Yes, it switches. Yeah, what we find is that in the right. When we did the homogeneous turbulence, then we just did fourth order centered, and so it was energy conserving to leading order. But if we do that in the Rance and the Euler region, then it just blows up because there's just no ID viscosity to help it. And so then we use typically fifth order upwind. And then there's a switch based on the length scale that fields and switches to centered in the turbulent region. It's second order implicit in time. And yes, we spend many nights losing sleep over artificial dissipation and all these things. So definitely there's a lot of demand for high accuracy with low dissipation, but still stable. And now that's what is a little scary with some of the unstructured codes. And codes are just second order upwind, and that's really dissipative. But then they say we can't go much higher order without a stencil that runs out. Goes out of sight, and then the memory goes out of sight too.
Okay, that's all the time we have for questions at this point, but if any of you have other questions, I'm sure you can come and ask Philippe afterwards.
Right.
Please join me in thanking Philippe again for his excellent talk.
Thank you.